This whole thing is like an exercise in unclinging. We don't typically notice how powerful the reflex of clinging is. You know, like clinging with the body, clinging with the eyes, right? Clinging with any and all sense organs to, you could say, grab experience or convert it into having some kind of meaning, or how something, you know, might interest you or satisfy you or stimulate you somehow. And we're profound in so many bandwidths that, you know, we're easily and thankfully stimulated across really, you know, profound arc of sensitivity. I mean, you know, moment to moment, we're, you know, overwhelmed. Practically speaking, you know, not psychologically speaking, but in a strange way, overwhelmed by how rich the arc of sensitivity and bandwidth and the data field is, how profound the most subtle, you know, vibrations are. And the reflex of clinging, whether it's through naming and formation or recognition or like or dislike or color or shape or form or sentiment, emotion, right, planning and strategizing, right, all of these reflexes of clinging kind of crowd out the quality of receptivity, which is non-specific. So the reflex is to specify where the profundity of one's actual experience is non-specific. And the religions won't help, because the religions simply tend to remedy the consequences of clinging within the field of clinging, right?
Validate.
Yeah, there's a validation, and then an accusation, and then remediation, right? Through loyalty, tithing, financial and other forms of supplication to the deity. And the deity could be any number of, right, deities. Whatever we profess fealty to is that deity which we hope will mitigate our confusion. And that whole thing turns out to be a big pile of shit. So the Gnostic approach is not about the knowledge. It's a more subtle alchemy. It's the alchemy of the recognition of the movement of clinging and the only apparitional or apparent consequences of that clinging. That's the alchemy. Lead into gold was, you know, you could say a ruse to confuse the powers that be, to easily dismiss those that were committed to true alchemy. They didn't really want to draw attention to the fact that they were going on a transhuman journey. You know, a little risky. Yeah.
From what you're saying, which isn't much.
Isn't much is good.
But the clinging seems to be more to define oneself than it is to engage in whatever they're offering. If you're taking it into yourself, for yourself, it's not really that you're joining them so much as you're claiming, you're defining yourself.
Yeah, well, that's all you really can do, because they're ultimately, or not even ultimately, presently there is no them. Mm-hmm. There's really only yourself. And so any loyalty or anything that you invest in psychologically or superstitiously or otherwise is self-defining.
So you're choosing an identity for it.
There's a reflex.
I'm
going to
be one of them, and then I'll be better than them.
Well, yeah, but even that is kind of downstream, right? Because the more, can I suggest, the more subtle reflex of identity hits you like a, you know, ton of bricks even before you assign yourself to a religion or some kind of, you know, comparison. Right. Yeah. Before it becomes socioeconomic, the clinging is already, you know, in place. It's already, you could say, infiltrated the myth of your own consciousness.
Well, the desire to create your identification would come before the choosing the method of identification.
Yes, absolutely. Right, right. Yeah. So, you know, that's what the alchemist does. The alchemist looks into the, call it the genesis or geometry or mechanism, were there one, and we're not sure there is, of how this, what we call experiencing, clings and creates boundary fields which define self as body, mind, and space, time. Most humans, were there any, pretty much take body, mind, and space, time as a definitive default reality. As a definitive and default reality, you know, from which platform we function to optimize satisfaction in all the curious ways we think we need to be satisfied, right? Which can include all kinds of wonderful appearances. Some that we can go to jail for.
Many do.
And many do. Really.
CEO's got to work, you know.
Yeah.
Action officers, they need jobs.
They need jobs too, yeah.
That's right.
That's right. Now, the conversation changes, you know, very abruptly. Not really gradually, but really abruptly when it's no longer about the myth of human trying to optimize satisfaction or mitigate what we call suffering. That's, who cares? Who cares? But that releases you from the influence of one or a million authorities that have a solution for you as long as you have cash. You're done with them. Which is abrupt. It's very abrupt. I mean, it may take 20 years for that abrupt to come to full fruition, right? Granted, it's profoundly abrupt, but it may take 20 years to, you know, yeah, come to fruition. Yeah.
There's almost an inexhaustible urge to think that there is something.
Well, almost inexhaustible, you could say, is, you know,
you see, there is
blatantly inexhaustible. Yeah. Yeah. Then it's over. That's right. When something, that not that it's a thing, snaps, the reflex of clinging, the reflex of objectification, the reflex of reification abates, either gradually or suddenly, 20 years or all at once, no big deal, then the gig is up. And that may or may not be a remedy for suffering. But who cares?
In some respect, the gig is up when you just give up that this is going to be a remedy for suffering.
Yes.
It changes the whole texture of the investigation.
Absolutely. Yeah. Any what I might indulgently refer to as a poignant insight has the capacity to reveal to us that the gig is up. Though we may ride about, you know, and fight with that revelation for who knows how many, you know, years, lifetimes, whatever measure of time you're fond of in the moment. Yeah. Without clinging, you can't deny what we might refer to as corporeal sensation, right? We can't say exactly what corporeal sensation is in terms of its source or how it touches your sense windows, because it doesn't actually define a body. It's just sensation.
there's no need to actually define anything.
No.
So.
That's right. Yes, the cessation of clinging releases us, whatever us are, we are us, toys are us, from, you could say, even the most subtle implication of identification.
The definition is irrelevant.
Yeah.
And all the things that prior to were considered relevant are actually irrelevant.
Yeah, that's another lovely poetry to look at it. Yeah, all things that were relevant, including our subjectivity, our consciousness, or even our body, are included in the great irrelevancy.
But the irrelevancy is irrelevant.
Is
what I like.
But the irrelevancy is irrelevant.
It is relevant.
Yes.
The fact that nothing's relevant is the only thing that's relevant.
Okay.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's like a wheel inside a wheel.
It's a, yeah. Am I the hamster or the wheel?
Which is great for somebody like me who doesn't know what else going on.
That shows.
It's acceptable.
Right. Yes. For someone like you.
There's no need to know what's going
it's
on.
Great.
It doesn't.
Nice. Irrelevancy, the great relevancy of irrelevancy frees you from having to know anything about anything, which is your natural state, so you're good to go. Yes, absolutely, along with the rest of the world. The great, just fuck off.
In a nice way.
Of course, always in a nice way. We don't want to, you know, insult anybody. Except if they go to like some kind of interfaith church. Yeah, so that's it in a nutshell. You know, whatever that implies. It's really like, whoa, done, toast, over, story gone. Say again?
My experience is not something that I can elaborate.
Yes.
In the midst of a clinging world.
Right.
I get to know. Cling to whatever you want.
Sure.
Have fun.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get sucked in by your clinging.
No.
Hang loose.
Yep.
And there's an exquisite tension, internal tension.
Yes.
Between doing it and not clinging to knowing that it doesn't matter.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. And it's a sweet kind of ecstasy. Yeah.
It's available every moment.
Yeah. Once we start rewiring the consensus reality or the vocabulary that's used to conduct and assert the consensus reality, now we have, you know, a profundity of profuse imagination and profuse affinity, more or less at our command or at its command, to wonder and dream any way you feel like. That's when, you know, what we could refer to as the great euphoria starts to kick in and be known, be felt. It's like now if you start identifying, for whatever that means, or your loyalty shifts from content and consequences to euphoria, which is the recognition of the great dreaming, you know, you're pretty much good for nothing. No one can count on you for shit. You more or less have become a marginally publicly acceptable heroin addict, but you're not needling.
And the beauty is,
yeah,
they're the ones that are pissed off, and you're like, sorry you feel that way.
Yeah, they are always pissed off.
Sorry you feel that way.
That's right.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, they've even nailed people to crosses, I've heard. When it comes to being pissed off at someone that's done with this place. And has the the silly notion to broadcast that. Jesus, keep it down. Master, just keep it down.
Drink the wine and eat the bread.
Really?
Shut up.
Really? You know, Lazarus didn't betray him. His big mistake was, you got to hear this guy. That was the big mistake. Hey, you got to come and hear this guy. The other devotees were like, oh, just keep it down.
Crucify your ass.
Yeah, that's it. That's right. And it's interesting to look at Christ's crucifixion in a complementary way that, you know, devout Christ-inspired people look at it. Rather than the, you know, sin thing, condemned to sin, right? I mean, the way they look at it, the way I've spoken to evangelical friends, body condemned to sin, born of sin, fucked for the long haul. Christ said, take me on their behalf that they can become fulfilled in God. And so, oh, Jesus, I made a mistake. Oh, could we take that back? Roll that back? Please, roll that back. Right?
I didn't really mean it.
Yeah. And, you know, it was too late then. The commitment had been made. So, I mean, I truly am enviable of the evangelical that says, yeah, born in sin, fucked for the long haul, Christ died on the cross and was resurrected and was reborn and ascended to heaven, which is the anointing of the miracle that he was true, right? And then one is released from sorrow and enmity and everything through belief in the Christ, in the consciousness. And I'm like, that's working for you? I'm not worthy.
Well, the first piece of the message is you're not worthy because this poor motherfucker died for you. It's like, you want to talk about guilt.
Mm-hmm.
You're a little baby, you little kid. You're like, yeah, you see that guy up there with the blood and the thorns? You look really
well,
comfortable.
Yeah.
Well, that's
right.
Because you are fucked up.
Yeah.
You were born in sin.
It can
it's
go.
A really nasty message,
yes,
if you ask me.
Yes, it can go that way, and agreeably, too often.
What I took
goes that way. Yeah. So yeah, if you took it in, you could say that's a pretty fair barometer of the culture at large.
Yeah.
Right? And then you stumble upon, you know, an evangelical spirit who has been touched by some degree of faith, which is super to mine, and wakes up to the greater relevancy through absolute total trust, faith in Christ. God's got my back no matter what's happening to me physically, psychologically, emotionally, my family, people I love, all the failures, it doesn't matter because Christ has my back. And you're like, that's incredible.
Yeah, you can't do it wrong. I never taken it that way.
You can't do it wrong.
That means you can't do it wrong.
You can't do it wrong. You can't screw up. No matter what happens to you, is the will of God. The power to get through it or to go to heaven to ascend it is also the will of God. You're good to go. It's
that is a pretty powerful message.
Oh my Lord. Isn't it?
But you're taking the guilt first and you never get to the basis of it.
Yeah, it's. We can appreciate that if there's 7-something billion of us, if there is, there's 7-something billion custom-made weirdnesses that infiltrate and influence the way that you live your life. But, right? Every single one is a one-off, though we have astrology and we have da-da-da-da-da's and we have, you know, all these systems that clearly package us somewhat neatly and predictably into recognizable patterns. If you're a Gemini, if you're a Capricorn, if you're a Pisces, if you've got, you know, Mercury rising, right? You're a one, you're an eight, you know, da-da-da-da. And these systems are like, wow, when it comes to personality, you're like, shit, that stuff really. You can pick, right? You can pick kind of patinas out of the crowd and go 5, 4, 8, 2 with a 3, you know. Yeah, amazing. And still, despite that kind of predictability of the charm of human persona, everyone is obviously completely weirdly unique. And not even existent as separate creatures. And there's no quarrel. This is not even existent as separate creatures, and yet all you see is profound uniqueness down to the pixel. And each pixel is dreaming. Each pixel is not an object. The atom's not an object. The neutron, the proton, the electron, they are not objects. They are dreamt impression. They're chaos. They're timeless, spaceless chaos. You peer into any one of them, and what you're seeing is the undulating dreaming of each so-called point, each seed, each pixel. That looks like it can do this, you know, and make a sound when you hit your own head. Whoa! Dudenheim. Whoa, Dudenheim. Yeah. Something frees up in us when you could say the lamentation of the persona, right, and the inventory of the life not well lived, we can put that aside for, I don't know, a couple minutes, maybe an hour or so, right, and dream freely. We give ourselves permission to dream outside the boundary field of the self-accusation of suffering. It's the self-accusation of the myth of suffering.
I think at the very end of your life, after the head's been haranguing you for, you know, 80 years if you're lucky, the last thing it says is, you know, you really fucked this up.
Yeah, yeah. I tried to tell you, but you just kept insisting. No, I'm a suffering victim. No, I was like, look, it's not that way. Fuck you.
It seems to be here that it's possible that you can't fuck it up. It's like it's not possible.
It isn't possible to fuck it up.
You can't pin it down enough to quantify it as good, bad, fucked up, not. You can't.
That.
And it ain't over till the fat lady sings anyway.
That and a thousand
Andy,
other.
What's her name? She's dying on.
Annie?
Tammy Baker. She already sang on national television.
Oh, the fat lady?
Yeah.
I see.
That's where my mind went.
Yeah. That and a million other insights on tap are the reason this doesn't work.
It's like too dense to work. It's too dense to pin down.
Dense could be correct, or you could say it's too ephemeral. And there's no quarrel. Isn't it curious if the data stream is dense beyond dense beyond dense beyond dense, pouring in nonstop and diffusing and transmutating from so-called moment to moment, even though there are none, if that's dense. And the same view of that whole is also just perfect plasma, perfect ephemera. There's no density to be found. And it has no quarrel appearing as dense beyond imagination and absolutely nothing at all.
It's like we're looking at this thing, okay, I'm looking at it, I can see it from this angle, this is what it looks like. And then you begin to get that, wait a minute, there's another angle from this side, and it looks completely different, then there's another angle, and that goes on to infinity.
Even if you could...
You can never pin down what
yes,
it looks like.
Even if you could stay in a certain angle and not even move to any other angle, this one won't stay still. So the infinity, both of consciousness as the perceiving, right, plasmic centrism, and phenomena as that which is perceived by this centrism, are both in total motion. They're both made of the same nothingness, both expression of the same infinity.
And actually are just
and the same.
Just aware.
So this is what we are.
Which is you.
Where
you take
I get
so seriously.
Really.
Because I have a thing about
you have a thing?
The word suffering.
Okay. Share. Please share with us, sister.
I have already over and over again, but I'll do it again.
What? We failed to reply to it, or we don't get it yet?
It failed. I have a thing for it.
All right. No, I have a thing.
I don't expand on my previous.
If you got a thing, let's expand the thing.
So the suffering, because I don't think there is actually suffering.
Huh.
Don't tell Jesus that it's on the cross.
Really?
When you identify with suffering as a separate individual, suffering has this negative connotation.
Really?
When there's no identification, aside from you're perceiving the suffering,
yeah,
then there's no suffering in the suffering.
Yes, yes.
No identification. Because, say that again. No identification aside from your perceiving the suffering.
If you perceive that you're suffering, or you're
right,
to
right,
suffering,
I am suffering.
Suffering.
I've got this issue.
So there's an identification that is suffering.
It's the I that creates the suffering. It's the I am suffering. There is suffering.
That there's any individual at all, whether you say it's your husband or your...
Yeah. It's the ownership. It's the I in front of the experience that makes it...
It's a separate entity. If there's no separate entity, then there's only this occurring, and there's no pain. I don't think there's pain in it.
If I punched you right now, there might be pain.
Might not.
Physical pain is it's just it's a sensation.
It's more radiance,
right?
Yeah. Even if you're screaming from it, it's still more radiance.
What about God has not forsaken me? Whatever the hell.
So that was a misquote.
What
was like, motherfucker, this hurts.
If I marry, it's my Christian background.
That was a misquote.
This
God has forsaken me. Motherfucker. Bastards, a fucking lot of them. Jesus Christ.
Oh, that's...
That would be me.
I'm going to have a lot of fun rewriting the script on the cross, right?
Which is that if death is separation, so it can be separation, but it's just death is separation. Separation from the body, and in Jesus' case, separation from the Father.
Yeah.
So when he said that, that was the moment of separation, that was the moment of death for him. And most likely he said it only to sort of validate the successful
The sacrifice that was made.
The project is finished.
Yeah, right.
Because the separation was necessary, that was the death.
Yeah.
The sin that he took had to be separated from God the Father, okay, at that time. It had to be separated. And that's...
In our own so-called moment-to-moment experience, right, the crucifixion could be associated with this reflex of clinging. And the ascension is the release from that clinging. You don't necessarily have to be, you know, whipped and speared and skewered with nails and stuff, but sometimes it feels like that.
It does.
Really, I can relate to that.
Who here has not felt somewhat crucified at some point in their life?
Yeah. So if there's a portal into the angelic realm, well, it would be this, just right here, just this. This is it. This is a nonstop, euphoric, dreaming, resplendent, creative, infinite, angelic realm. So that all that which appears to be perceived and all that which appears to do the perceiving is of the same nature. Just a dreaming singularity or a dreaming non-singularity. And its only nature, its only true nature is that of disembodied euphoria.
I heard the last psychologist lecture written a big anthology of cancer treatment. They're covering everything you can think of.
Yeah.
It's like the Bible. That every oncologist should read and offer it to fundamental points that I checked on. We're brilliant. We're touching on this. There's the 2A. One of the 2A. One of the A.
The letter A.
Yeah. One is autonomy. And the other is anxiety.
Okay.
That's what all of the... You find out you have cancer.
Yeah.
You show up. That's what shows up. Anxiety, neurotoxin.
I see.
And he has complete and total respect.
Right.
For both of them.
Yes.
He can't do anything about it for you.
No.
He doesn't want to be tell you what to do, figure it out. What he can do is inform you.
Yeah.
We have information about possible approaches.
Yeah.
You don't have to use any of them.
Right.
You can alleviate the anxiety.
Uh-huh.
So I said, why not everyday people living in everyday world?
Yeah.
Why do you have to get cancer to see that?
Okay.
That's what we're dealing with.
Sure.
Yeah. Those two pieces.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a realization in there that the anxiety is what is disappeared.
Yes. Yep.
You go, what do you think is about?
Yeah.
You can see what's happening.
You take a look more closely and you find something a little closer to reality and what's there to worry about. The closer you get to reality,
there's nothing in
there. There is to worry
reality
about, and there's nobody here to worry about.
There's no substance, no consequence, no value, no meaning.
Yeah.
Get smushy.
Yeah.
It takes concrete shit to make you go, oh,
yeah. It appears to. It appears that if there is a trajectory of embodied consciousness through humanity, it looks like you have to get hit on the side of the head a bunch of times to start rethinking what it is that you hold dear.
Yeah, cancer can do that for you.
Sure.
But you don't need to. Well, some people do, but it's not necessary.
Yeah. But once the power of reflection, the power of introspection, the power of discovery, which is a creative force, discovery is open. It's not closed, right? Knowledge is closed. The repetition or the assertion of knowledge is, you could say, kind of a closed system. But discovery, you know, basks in, rides on the light of, I don't know.
Get out of the light?
No.
That light?
No, it's good.
Yeah,
yeah, it's good. I have sunglasses if they
totally
need
them. That you can be totally engaged, fully engaged, and simultaneously not get
of course.
That's the best way to engage.
It's a good thing.
That's what's available.
Disembodied euphoria plays by a different set of rules than the imagined boundary field of self. Not really, but practically speaking.
There's nothing that can touch the euphoria when you're in that state. I mean, you can see states around you, but
yes. Right, as we begin to familiarize ourselves with, to coin a phrase, radiant presence, which is both the container and the vibration of euphoria, disembodied euphoria itself, then that's where your loyalty goes. You know, your loyalty goes to the bright, not to the right symptom.
And that's when you say, thank God.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus.
Absolutely. Yep. Even if there is no one to thank, thank them all. Thank you, Hanuman. Thank you, Ganesha. Right. Yeah. For me, if there is such a thing, you could say that the problem I have with the suggestion of noticing, or any kind of suggestion that harnesses your five senses, or even your sensibility, is, let's just say, it's a slippery slope, because it's really easy to become materialistic with the implication of something referred to as noticing. It may not be intended that way because it's multivalent. I mean, noticing could be what's happening in your sense field or what's happening in mindfulness, right? That's a form of noticing. Or it could be, you know, the textures of what's present. Not mental at all, right? Just the profundity of all the textures that are present. Light and sound and sensation and taste and like, whoa. Including the consciousness that is, you know, only present by virtue of the fact that something's feeling all this. Right? Consciousness is not independently existent. It's just a word. So what do we mean by consciousness? That this is felt. But it doesn't say that there is a thing called consciousness. It's really like that this is felt. That this is so. So then we split it by saying consciousness, whether body, mind, or whatever, and that which it's conscious of. But that which is felt is not really separable. That which is felt is the entirety of that it's felt and what it is that's felt, not that it's a what. Now there's no longer a separation, psychologically, emotionally, or in any respect, between that this is felt.
There's no room for judgment. This is good, this is bad.
Yeah, no, yeah, that's completely off the table.
Ceaseless.
Yes.
That's what's happening.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And you
yes.
can't stop it anyway, right?
Well, you can try.
But you can't stop
make
it.
Make a story about it.
Yeah, well, you can inebriate in one form or other right. to the point of death, but the yogis in the know would say it's not going to work. To refine the level of so-called refinement that this is feeling is not dependent on, you know, a biologically viable body. It's not. The biologically viable body is an apparition appearing in that this is felt. Yeah.
It's much more virtual.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, it's only virtual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is where that singularity stuff, like I'm like listening to them, I'm like, it already is virtual. This, they don't see it.
Yeah.
And so maybe all that stuff will maybe become more blurred and whatever.
The but singularity is...
It still hangs out in the human realm pretty heavily.
Yeah.
And it's really funny.
Yeah.
It's like, well, this already is virtual, so it's just going to get weirder, more weirder virtual.
The singularity...
And the lines will be blurred, but we'll still all be arguing over, you know... Who has rights and who doesn't? Who the fuck cares? He's not taking it outside that. I mean, it's so fun to play with.
Yes, the singularity is the people in the singularity are symptoms of alchemists that think this is something.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, hey, let's, you know, easy up on the something.
Well, yeah, and then there's these, you know, we need to live forever and all these things, and it's like, this already, already is virtual. It doesn't mean that any of that stuff stops, though, because that's just what this is doing in the virtual realm.
Yeah. You could say if there's clinging to the singularity, we're looking at a genesis of some form of immortality, of consciousness, surviving the limitation of the biologic, purely biologic form, married to silicon-based and other elemental forms of life, so that the call it consciousness can continue to have a viable vehicle for much longer than this one is, or withstand the pressures of call it some kind of interstellar travel, were that ever relevant, so that this consciousness could permeate as quantum entangled with all and everything. What they don't get is that's already the case.
But that
dudes,
still,
we're there.
Well, that may still happen in the virtual environment.
Yes,
because it
absolutely.
That, I mean, this doesn't give a fuck that it's
no,
doing that.
No.
So, you know, whatever.
Really.
Party on. But.
Hey, God, did you hear the humans? The humans did it. They destroyed themselves. Oh, let me take out my violin.
Well, destroying themselves. mean anything.
Right. Yeah.
If it's all just like a virtual, it's like, so, game over. What do? You start a new game.
Yeah, yeah. Why not?
Seven more lives.
Yeah. You got 52 cards. Throw the deck up again. Something's going to happen.
Yeah,
what a curious pastime this is.
Maybe this avatar will do better.
Yeah, right.
Do you ever feel like you want to push the envelope and
expose myself at a shrine somewhere so I can get arrested?
No.
Push the envelope on that. See if you can water.
Why not?
You know?
Yeah. Who doesn't like to sit, you know, behind the wheel of a Corvette and lean on the pedal?
Right.
I mean, we're blue-collar folks, so we use Corvette, you know. Other people in the neighborhood would replace that with Maserati or an F450 or something,
yeah.
Right?
Or Ferrari.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
GT4.
My encounter is the Lamborghini.
Yep.
The speed limit, I should not go, ever go over it again.
Yeah.
Because it almost does. I'm right on the threshold of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Return.
Yeah.
Like the first 2 minutes.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I drive like an old thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, this pushing the envelope or, you know, pushing in is, again, virtual, right? Not necessarily risk-taking.
Well, now, I'm talking about, like...
wearing a squirrel suit and jumping off a high cliff?
I really don't even want to tell you.
You don't have to, yeah. Keep your envelope to yourself.
Let's say maybe being homeless.
Yeah, right.
Like, who needs this shit because it's in the way?
This happens, my dear. I mean, less so perhaps in this culture voluntarily. There's plenty of homeless all over this country, you know, that are there largely involuntarily. But, yeah, you can certainly, you know, find yourself in a condition of euphoric resonance where you might not be all that concerned about what you possess and what you don't. Yeah.
You can choose to do that.
Yeah, it could come about that it looks like you chose
and
to do
see,
that.
And see, I'm...
Yeah.
That's what I'm calling pushing the envelope.
Sure.
If I felt like the rat is actually... more openness, let's say.
Right.
In that,
you'd go.
Yeah.
You'd go. You'd be foolish not to. Mm-hmm. If some kind of wormhole opened up and you saw more openness there, apparitionally or otherwise, go. What do we have but wormhole after wormhole after wormhole after wormhole in which we are trying to assert some kind of meaning or relevance? If all you've got is nonstop wormholes showing up in the beauty of your face and you cling to nothing, you'll take every one of them.
Then why give up a nice, comfortable queen or king size?
No need. No need. You know? Yeah, no. Yeah, absolutely no need.
That's what they
have to do. But it might appear as an adventure that has to be taken. Right?
Or good. The adventure of, you know, a grand mansion. Who the hell knows?
Yeah, right.
That's right. There's no hierarchy of what is appropriate for your next wormhole,
visitation. The eye thinks there's a hierarchy. The eye clearly thinks that, you know, a grand mansion sounds a hell of a lot better than a big street.
You know, I don't believe... Here's what I think it comes down to. Is I don't believe myself that... How do you put it? That I'm not attached to stuff. And there's only one way to find it.
I hear you. Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, like, see, am I or am I not? And I am attached to stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But how do I unattach myself?
Well, you... Yeah, that's all... Right, all that's fine.
Curiosity and wanting to know...
Yeah?
If...
That's why.
If there's more openness available...
But that sounds like a manipulation. You think that's going to get you someplace, just like...
I see it as...
I'm a Capricorn.
I see it as clearly... Clearly an improvisational consideration. And that's all you've got in your face from moment to moment is an improvisational consideration. Someone might want to take a journey that I would avoid at all costs if I could, right? And we don't know.
I've heard it said you put yourself in the most uncomfortable place you can find. That'll, like, do you a little good.
Okay.
And my experience is the universe sort of conspires to do that for you. You don't even have to do it.
The world
will come impinging just because you're willing. You don't have to reach out for it. It's going to show up on your freaking doorstep.
Peace Pilgrim did it. She put on a t-shirt and just started walking, and she said, I'm yours.
That's somewhat attractive to me, you know. Not saying I'm stuck. I'm just like...
She was a sage. She was fearless. She wiped clean all conformity.
Yep.
Right?
She's
completely ascended.
Across the country numerous times.
Yeah.
With just like a tunic and a toothbrush and a pencil for a forest pot.
Sounds like Jack Ruby.
That's real freedom,
but
that's my opinion.
No good. Right. What's stopping you?
Yeah, well, whatever.
I have Emily, and she's.
It's not even that it has to come to fruition.
Right. I'm just considering.
I mean, this is just dreaming. So even the consideration of it, even the breath of freshness or freedom that you sense by contemplating it. Is the fruition.
Yeah.
You've basically done it. In that moment, you have become homeless. Mm. In that moment, you have no care in the world and nothing binds you, and you're breathing pure nitrous oxide of absolute freedom.
Right.
So you might still do it, so-called,
and
in the world,
it
but...
it wouldn't be a question, either. It would be a...
No, fuck it.
It just might happen.
You know.
Yeah, some yogis sit in cemeteries and, you know, they live on the fruit that's left behind.
It doesn't have to be a mind fuck.
Not
but
for
you
long,
can just
maybe.
Really totally, 100%, fully, completely be in the seat you're in and that'll do it.
Yes.
Like, if you're just completely in the seat you're in and all resistance goes away.
Yeah.
You know, you're not doing the resistance. You're just... right here.
Yes.
Do it.
That's it. This is
you don't
it.
Have to reach for something. You don't have to, like, check out homelessness or you just this.
Yeah.
Enough.
Yes. And
more
that and that's not a quarrel with checking out anything and everything.
You might do that next.
Yeah. There's no actual position that one need take to the at the exclusion of any other position. The fucking thing's dreaming. What? Dream yourself homeless? Become homeless. Dream yourself into a house you can or can't afford in a different place? Buy it. Rent it. You know? Okay. I mean, if we were 7 and 8 years old, living in South America in a tribe of homeless creatures, trying to avoid going into the sex slave trade, we might have a different conversation.
You would.
You know? Right? I mean, we're just, you know, we're out sitting out
that.
Sitting outside of, you know, wigwams under a canopy.
I feel like
in the cool evening air.
And it's, you know,
sucking on chocolate. Real a lot of courage, right?
The disreputable character of the table is thinking that we can make it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's always an end. You can't think of the complexity.
No.
You just can identify a little particle.
Yeah.
That's all you got.
Yeah. If the you could say the bandwidth of perception is both infinite and infinitely subtle and infinitely angular and quantum entangled and Heisenberg uncertain. at the same time, it can appear to be, you know, very afflicted.
Thinkable.
Yeah, thinkable. That's right. Thinkable is a nice way to put it. Sure. Yeah. Hey, thank you all. Yeah, it's funny to look at whether this your present experience is actually thinkable. Suggesting, is it actually representational? Can you really, really conjure an imaginary or apparitional or conditional reality out of nothing at all? We only think we can, but we can't really. That's how weird the apparition is, that we think that we're doing this or this is being done or that we might have some role in it, but that's not really the case.
We think we're the author. The Course in Miracles talks about the issue of authorship.
Okay,
we're
so
sure
does Wayne Lickerman.
We're the author.
Yeah.
It's an issue of authorship.
It was funny, I had a friend say something like the other day too about like, well, because in a dream I could like just do random shit. I said, can you really every night before you go to sleep you just randomly see whoever you want to see? Does that actually happen? Do you actually have control over that? No, actually you don't. Just like that guy just walked by, same fucking thing.
Yeah,
you really don't.
That's right. Yeah
just occasionally seems that way.
Mm-hmm.
Which happens here too.
Mm-hmm. The problem with the Course in Miracles, you know, especially in the later chapters where it starts self-celebrating, right? There's always a problem when you hit a certain quality of liberation or revelation. That's really cool, but the impulse to then frost it is almost unavoidable, and so the Course, you know, hits you right out of the bat with some really like, whoa, hey, whoa, but then it starts to frost it. And when it starts to frost it, that's when it becomes evangelical. Because now the ego becomes a thing, and yours sucks, and here's why. And, you know, even the notion of authorship suggests that the reason that we, quote, suffer or da-da-da-da is because of authorship, so I should have no authorship. You see, so it gets so compartmentalized and objectified so quickly.
Where's Lisa when you do?
Yeah.
Argue.
Yeah, right. To defend it all.
Squirrel mind. I remember squirrel mind.
Squirrel.
Yeah.
Actually, you could say ownership. This versus mine.
It's, yes, that you could say has some operating poignancy were this something. But were it nothing,
seems to be something.
Then the whole notion or the wrinkle of authorship and no authorship is no longer relevant. Because authorship and no authorship still has to be built on a foundation that this is something. So then it can start suffering, and then we can start looking at why it's suffering and then try to untangle the myth of the entirety of that. But if it's nothing to begin with, then you're not even motivated to do anything about your so-called suffering. I mean, you really pulled the rug on the fucker. Really pulled it. And from my experience, I'm not skilled in the Course of Miracles by any means, but from my, you know, blasphemous pride, I can say it doesn't go there. It doesn't pull it.
Didn't pull it for me, but I was for a while.
It doesn't pull it. Because I've gone to some meetings, you know, Course in Miracles meetings over the years, and I check, well, I'm looking around to see what the implication of the Course has been on the people that are gathered. And pardon me, but I don't see all that many people, if a single one, where the rug has actually been pulled. That includes, you know, that Texas Jew girl.
Marianne Williamson.
Marianne Williamson, the Texas Jew girl. Pinky Friedman and the Texas Jew Boys. I think she was in that band. Yeah, the rug didn't fall on Marianne Williamson either.
It's so subtle when you know, you pick up the edge of the rug or whatever. It's so subtle.
Yep. That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. if samsara and nirvana happen to be exactly this, and if you can't actually discriminate between disembodied euphoria and clinging, and they're not mutually exclusive, mind you, that's too weird, because we insist that this has to be one thing or another. It can't possibly be both samsaric disembodiment or samsaric embodiment and nirvanic disembodiment at the same time as the same thing. What? Right? I'm either suffering or I'm not suffering. Stop kidding around. You're like, no, you're neither suffering or not suffering. Or you could say, well, yeah, you're both suffering and not suffering. This is trans tautology. Talk about a rug pull.
No negotiation.
Yeah, there is no negotiation. Prahlad Brahmachari had very little stuff. But he was given land and a very modest ashram that was no bigger than this, parking lot, was set in motion with very modest buildings, and he more or less slept on a slab of wood with a thin mat in a tiny little room about twice the size of this table. Right?
You see my bedroom.
Yeah, like your bedroom. Your bedroom is a closet.
There's the table.
Yeah. Yeah. And so as a renunciate, as a yogic renunciate, Brahmanic priest, yogic renunciate, kundalini master, blah, 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 he had very little in terms of personal possession, but he commanded, or he looked over in a, call it paternalistic or guruific way, people and buildings and animals and jungle and the local village and, a lot. So he had a lot on his plate in terms of the atmosphere of his reach and sensitivity, but all he had was an agreeing cupboard with a crappy lock on it. That's where he would put our passports. Give me your passports and your wallets, All right, here. And he'd throw them in that green cupboard, Anyone could have walked in there, shot everybody up, and walked off with the green cupboard, at their own peril, but still they could have. Talk about having nothing. And he more or less, lived kind of homelessly, in a manner of speaking, though he had a roof over his head and fresh flowers to do his worship with.
Well, there is the falling away of certain appetites. I look at the younger people at work, young ladies at work, and I remember when I used to be like that. And it's like, I couldn't muster that now if I had to.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
It's fading.
Yeah.
Visceral fading of certain appetites.
Yeah.
And I think some of that's natural as you get older.
Sure.
But it seems to this accelerates that sort of stripping away.
Yeah, you withdraw from the false and you enter consciously and texturally in disembodied euphoria. And that's gonna wipe your clock. Your clock.
The real stripping away is the appetite for what's gonna give me what I think I need next spiritually.
That's big stuff.
The granddaddy of falling away.
Okay, that's right.
And that's the rug coming out.
Oh yeah, that's a big rug pull. Ouch.
So then, and this is only coming up now, so I'm sorry.
We know that.
I have no idea where I'm going with this.
Uh-huh.
But the word spiritual hit me. So then, I'm asking myself.
Out loud, we know that, yes.
Self, says I.
Yeah. Am I... Am I pursuing something? I don't even know.
Yeah, what fun.
Because it appears as though I might be, if I'm asking, if I get rid of my stuff.
Yes.
But to me, that it doesn't really make sense. It's just more words.
Mm-hmm.
but my, I guess, identity feels like that is, what is the word, bringing it to a head. Right?
Okay, sure.
But then that's not really legitimate, I guess.
It's as real as it appears to be for as long as it appears to be real.
Yeah.
Now, that could look like 40, 50, 60 or more years. Or, whoa! You know, like whatever's appearing as in right now in what you call your experience, your actual experience, were there one, it's like, whoa, whoa. If you take a moment to say what's happening to you right now, you'd be lying. Not because you're a liar, but because you can't know what's happening right now, and you certainly can't articulate it.
You destruct you.
Yes. Yeah.
That's why it's felt.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Felt. It's felt because one is struck mute and moot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the fruition of the singularity without having to go to robotics. Yeah. You take off the cloak of space-time. You just, you know, drop it. It's nice. The wonder field is exactly what I am.
God knows what comes in and goes out and what happens.
Oh, yeah. This is a fully inclusive eclecticism. Everything's allowed in. Yeah. You've worn the brakes down to the metal and then some. You can press on the pedal all you want, but it's not going to slow down. They're not even squeaking anymore. There's so little there. Now they're starting to spark. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I keep getting...
What the hell are we doing?
We're having an infinity party.
I keep getting this image of this monster conveyor belt, and we're all just, whoop, there goes another one, whoop.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're all in this conveyor, bloop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, there's no, you're going to go bloop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just,
yeah.
You can't
into
not.
A giant acid vat of love.
Speed it up.
Yeah, you fizzle on impact. Yeah.
You look fizzy.
It's like 12 molar hydrochloric, you know. You just disintegrate on impact. You don't even feel anything.
Well, that's the note of a carrot that you're pressing about my husband. My suspicion is that he has words.
He does have them, with that we know, right?
He has lots of words.
Yeah.
And he's used them repeatedly.
Yeah.
And been acknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Oh, God.
Well, the little blurb, like, I was like, yeah, sounds good to me. I read his little blurb.
Well, I took the material that he sent and fashioned it in the most
efficient way.
Oh, yeah.
You're setting the hook, baby.
Oh, absolutely.
He's going to be reeling him in. I want to be there.
I mean, even the title of the talk is Resting in What?
Damn straight. What is it, the 16th?
Resting in something, right? He didn't offer that title. I said, guess what? I'm going to hold you to it.
Damn, you're going to get a great turnout.
Resting in the Self.
Do you have any idea what he's in for?
I don't know. I mean, Frank has written to him really succinctly about, you know, how weird this is, and I've tried my hand at it, too, to reflect on how weird this is. And he asked me in a recent email, am I teaching a class or giving a talk? I said, take any and all liberty you want to take to fly as high as you want to fly with us. Is that a fair invitation?
Very fair.
Right? More than fair. Okay. So.
Doesn't mean we'll let you fly long, but you can try.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, isn't this little part of, if, or all of what we do is, you could say, grant each other sufficient permission and sufficient affection to fly as high as you feel like flying.
Fall flat on your face.
Because we're not engaged in imposing on each other, you know, the banality of my life. So we really have agreed through some strange, you know, astrological event that we give each other permission to dream.
And look at the dreams.
Yeah.
That's what they, the words are.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, to report
so
back.
That's the thing I don't like about the dreams.
Okay. In that they don't speak.
Yeah,
or
speak.
Or when they do, it's
like so spontaneous.
But there is a...
It's not examinable. It's not... You can't open it up further.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a goodness in silence, though. Words don't always do shit, and especially if you don't have much...
Well, we're pushing the envelope.
It's just meditating if we're sitting there in silence.
No, but it's a little different.
It's a nice way to hang with people.
But meditating, I'm not...
I know a lot of people that would do better not saying anything.
What?
I know a lot of people that would do better by not saying anything.
Yeah. Well, nobody at this table.
That's why I've gotten quieter.
Yeah.
I don't know what the point was with that, but I assume there was a
deep reflection results in silence. Whoa.
She's deep.
I'm done. cancel on my mind.
No, she said, I know a lot of people that could do well. Basically saying, I don't want to hear them talk anymore. So I'm parading myself.
I see. You took the cue.
Well, if they sit there silent, I got more ideas. They're just being there, right?
You ever go to
no, I haven't. But I haven't.
Anybody who knows...
Let's crash a Quaker meeting.
Definitely.
See what the hours are.
Already not.
The challenge or the arc of imagination or playfulness is to take the revelatory potency of, let's call it, mindfulness in its most sublime forms and bring it forth, not that it need be brought forth, it's like already here, but then work with it conversationally rather than in some kind of introverted isolation. Yeah. That's the challenge. Without sitting on the cushion, rolling your eyes into your own head and doing your own Namyaha Renge Kyo or, you know, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Bor Bhavatswa Tatsavitor Vanenyam, you know, it's like, hey, this is pretty fucked up. You know, did someone bring chocolate to the table or what? Yeah. It's euphoric, and I think that we're actually better off when our, you could say, shared atmosphere of discovery contributes to the euphoria than when we're following these ridiculous Asian models of, you know, facing the wall. Why face the wall? Why not face God? What's wrong with you? I mean, the wall's cool, but face each other. Wake the fuck up. Do it today. Not in some kind of, you know, introverted isolation of a self-hypnotic mindfulness, but, you know, in the fullness of yourself. Just because you're speaking and thinking and feeling and agonizing or whatever you're doing does not mean that you have failed to be in deep meditation, that you have somehow failed to reveal all that this can and will reveal. Right? It's like, it's a kind of a, it's a falsehood. It's a contrivance to do these kinds of forms of meditation because it all comes from monkey see, monkey do on the images of the Buddha under the Bodhi tree. It's all monkey see, monkey do. You know, who knows what was going on with the Buddha? You know, maybe he got to that point after yabbering and doing all the renunciations he had done and all the stuff that he apparently done. He sat under the tree because he was like, I'm out.
Fuck this.
Right? I'm just clean fucking out. He wasn't meditating. He wasn't meditating. He was like, I'm exhausted. Shit, I am a fucking poser. Right? Sitting under the tree with all of that grace accumulated, he was like, I am a total poser. So Mara came to taunt him, and what did he do? He was like, dude, I'm empty. I'm full out. Bring it. Bring it. I'm full out. It wasn't, you know, this kind of noble thing that someone that resisted Mara and overcame the demon. It was a guy that was like so fucking spent. You couldn't mess with him. Didn't What's-Her-Name sing a song about that? Bobby McGee, right? What was the line? Nothing left to lose.
Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose.
Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. So the Buddha was under the tree. There was nothing left to lose. The guy was spent. And Mara was like, ho, ho, ho. And he was like, bring it, man. I got nothing. And all he did was touch the earth because he was probably tired, or, you know, he was playing around with a beetle or something. They think it was some big event. He was like, oh, look at the fucking beetle. You know, so he like reached down to fool around with the beetle, and everyone thought, oh, the Buddha touched the earth and dispelled Mara. He was like, no, he was playing around with the beetle. And Mara was like, this guy doesn't give a fucking shit about me, and was dissipated. Same event, different story.
Right.
How did the Buddha overcome Mara? Well, he was completely spent. He had nothing left. There was no resistance in him to be found about anything. Saw a beetle by his foot and was like, oh, look at the fucking beetle. And Mara was like, this guy's impossible. Fucking guy's impossible. I can't get any purchase on him. I'm out of here. And they say, oh, the Buddha overcame Mara. No, Mara left on account of absolute boredom. but then we all sit in the meditation hall. Because we think something happened. No, that's not what happened. So the entire culture of Buddhist contemplation is playing monkey see, monkey do with the Buddha, who was not meditating. He was just spent playing with a beetle. Now, if all these Buddhists would just chill out and play with beetles, they might have more chance at liberation than they do now. Try to convince one of it. Good luck. We'll go over to Glenside and tell those guys, hey, we found a lost scroll, man. No, the Buddha was not meditating under the tree. He was just fucking exhausted playing with a beetle. And they're like, oh, well, we should change our meditation program. We should change everything we've believed in since the get-go. And it's like, okay, so now we're a beetle culture. Dung beetle, preferred. Why not take it on? You're right. Why not take it all on? Why be puny in our discarding of consensus reality and all that it's cracked up to be? Why be puny? Take it all on. Take Ramakrishna on. Take the Buddha on. Take Nirsagadatta on. Take Thich Nhat Hanh on. Take it all on and see it through a really very casual set of eyes. A very, very casual, a very, very ordinary, completely innocent, completely exhausted, with nothing at all to prove ever, ever again. And then see all the birth and genesis points of these great religions be completely misunderstood, completely mistaken. Take it all on. That's fun. Because we can feel the pressure of the superiority of the superstition mind that's controlling the socioeconomic class, that's controlling the gender class and the race class and the 1% class and the chattel of the 1% class. You can see it. And you can stare right through it.
While still hanging out in fucking
Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Inundated.
Yeah. Yes.
Bathing in it.
Yes. Right. You happen to be the immersive motherfucker that you've been on the lookout for. Fuse lit.
Ha 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 ha
I love the looks on her face right now.
What?
You?
I'm confused.
As usual.
I'm confused and I don't get it. What?
Sweet.
Anybody see you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The movie with the, yeah.
Goes back to scrubbing toilets after she owns her.
That's a reality movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Is it good? That's good, yeah.
Cool. Just shift the button in your brain and look at it. That somebody's telling you what's happening. It's actually happening. Illustration.
Seeking suffers from two fundamental presumptions. That experiencing is occurring, and it's somehow insufficient. Insufficient. That this is so can't help but to suggest the fomentation or fermentation of a sense of I, because this is felt. That happens to be a singularity. This is felt as a singularity, but it can't help but to imply a feeler of that which is felt.
Attempting to get to a singularity.
Yeah, right. Attempting to return to a place that it never could possibly depart from.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Right. So seeking, which is lovely, of course, no one needs to start, stop, or do anything about it because it's irrelevant. When you know, some workshop when Ramesh Balsekar suggested that as you got closer to this, you know, as you were, like, accountable, the seeking would lessen or stop. Immediately, all the hands went up, and everyone basically said, oh, I'm not seeking any longer.
Yeah, okay.
And that's how they all introduced themselves. Oh, I'm not a seeker anymore. I'm like, seek what? What are you talking about? It's like a regurgitation of this line in this imaginary line in the sand that Ramesh talked about. That one of the sure signs that you're about, you know, the tiger's about to close its teeth on your neck is you're not seeking anymore. A big deal.
It's the same exact thing with all the 12-step people. If you just go to a meeting and say, I'm not drinking anymore, you haven't actually done anything, you're cool. You just, you know, I'm not drinking, but I don't drink anymore.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You get badges and chips for anniversary periods of freedom from the substance. But no one says, how's the wound? The wound could still be simmering.
Usually is.
And usually is.
Yep.
But we congratulate each other, and for all good purposes, on anniversaries of not using. But no one says, hey, how's the wound? Paul Hederman on
and
the...
And usually only just not using for one particular substance. It's not even...
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
oh yeah.
Somebody comes into a meeting
smoke
there, like,
and cigarettes, 350
pounds.
As much coffee.
Yeah.
And they've been out there smoking like chimneys and
congratulations!
You say change that.
Yeah. Right, here's a chip for that particular thing that you used to do that you haven't done for a while.
But you may want to think about getting a chip in another program for the other stuff. You're
yeah, doing. That's right. Right, we won't miss you if you want to go to, you know, SLA.
Huh?
kind of.
It's the one addiction, the next addiction.
Just trade.
You just got to start someplace.
Yeah. And if we look at what Paul Hederman suggests as the genesis of the wound, right? The genesis of the wound and the affliction. That's right. Identifying as self. That's the conflict of clinging, right? That's the samsaric impulse. So that means we all need to be in recovery, whether suffering from one or a million, substance mishandling, because consciousness itself, in the hands of what we call the human, needs a meeting.
I like that when
that's
he says
the nature of being alive.
Yeah.
You've got to recover.
Yeah, that's right.
He's like the drug addicts and the alcoholics. They got to know something that most people don't, because they're like, they get this. This is utterly fucking unbearable when you think you're a self.
Mm-hmm.
You they're trying to put out that fire because, they feel it more than your average bear.
Yeah, that's right. Trying to put out that fire. The fire of being a self. Yeah. Right.
Tired of this and I'm not taking it anymore.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that approach to it simply amplifies the selfishness rather than truly, ascends it. But that's okay. That's the nature of the wound. It's tricky. Yeah, it doesn't speak to the wound.
No, it's just the symptoms.
Right.
I was thinking about
while
my little trick.
Mm-hmm.
So what you were talking about with the meditation and how that's not even relevant.
Yes.
And the Buddha. And
yeah.
So I got the little light bulb. Thank you very much. The little light bulb went off.
Right.
It's the same thing I'm doing with the stuff.
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
My religion is I got stuff.
Right.
And I have to get rid of this stuff.
Yes.
So it's just another.
Yep. Yeah.
Another, like, sort of.
Yes.
What would you say? Doctrine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's good.
Sure. This assigns.
That's not!
It's kind of like saying, wait, this is too good to be true. Let me make it about something.
Then let me indulge in something. And then
yeah.
It really will look like it's about something.
Yes.
That's all Hederman says.
Yeah. You're sitting here in disembodied euphoria, and it's too good to be true. And then it's like, oh, this has to be about something. Because whatever that other thing was that I am is, I'm sorry, that's not possible. Too good to be true. I turn out to be too good to be true, so now I have to make this about something so I can dumb it down. Turn down the volume.
Could I actually be the mystery?
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, decent question. Yep. Yes. That's right. That's the question. And the Night Sky Sangha, is bold enough to try to answer it. Always comes up empty handed, but we give it a try. That's right. The question is, the password is, could I be the mystery? Let's find out.
But that again is so subtle, I don't know I'm engaging in it.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, yes.
You're not aware of it until you're aware of it, like anything else. Like, you're not aware of it until you're aware of it, and then you're aware of it, and that's it.
Yeah.
There's no.
Yeah. And the awaring of whatever there is to be aware of, which is, let's say, arguably bottomless, comes and goes with respect to clarity or intensity or
and
focus.
Then whatever you thought you'd become aware of is like, oh, that wasn't really.
Yeah.
I moved on. Whatever.
Yeah.
But why should it be so difficult? I'm gonna put a post-it up. Like,
right.
Everything is bullshit.
Why? Yeah.
That's the line.
Why should it be so difficult?
Everything is bullshit.
Right. Well, let's say the culture of a bacteriological form with an opposable thumb and a frontal brain complicates it because it's capable of so complicating it. what we call culture is, culture doesn't really exist. Culture is the word that we give to the magic behind consensus reality, or that there could be any conformity in terms of our thinking and our behavior and our cooperation, or our warfare and our jealousy and our theft, right? Yeah, so there's not really culture, it's just a word given to, whoa, look at this fucking shit. Like the World Bank, you know, or Donald Trump or Neil Young. What? No, I wouldn't seek it out.
Well,
yeah.
He was writing about how much money he has.
Oh, good.
And $8 billion is clear, but assets are 9 billion.
So you're just,
I don't know if PricewaterhouseCoopers would agree. But you know, who knows? That's great. Donnie. Rock and roll, pal.
Are you happy?
It's not
going to
buy him any real hair.
Yeah. Loving that comb over there, buckaroo.
Yeah. Bought him a bed.
Are your kids happy?
A couple brush jobs.
They even respect you.
I mean, he was a hero in the right wing. The right wing radio was the word.
Yeah. He has a lot of money, but you could say only feigned respect. Yeah. Oh, well.
So he's no different than the rest of us.
That's right. No different than the rest of us. With or without.
What's up?
We have a Maxfield Parrish Sky on demand.
You're going to take it to work, right?
Take it on.
You're going to take it on.
Yeah. Oh.
I spoke with Paul very one-on-one, mm-hmm. like over a table, you know, with coffee and chicken soup.
Right.
Looking at the whole vector of selfing and an approach that doesn't even really need to spend all that much time there. And his remarks were real interesting. First of all, he didn't see any quarrel between them, you know. So it's all for conversational delight. But what he was more or less saying was that he likes the Velcro of hooking, right, this as a suffering experience. Through selfing and the implication of selfing, which is for sure accusatory, right? Once you create that Velcro attachment. But he felt that it was valuable to create, elicit, or suggest that Velcro attachment by having some purchase on our attention or on the imagination of suffering. You could rally the energy or rally the attention to then withdraw from suffering or ascend out of suffering by dismantling the symptoms of the self, the symptoms of selfing.
But who's dismantling it? It's the self that's dismantling the symptoms of selfing, which is...
Well, again, you know, lowercase, uppercase, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Right. The nature of revelation itself does either the identification or the release of that identification, and if you like, an approach which appears to set some hooks in to this experience as selfing, so that you've got something to pull along the whatever those were called, you know, roller boards,
conveyor belt.
The conveyor belt, to then reveal that you're not that. that's cool.
It's like,
for me, it's
duality.
Yeah, for me, it's just too much work. It's too much work. Now, in the recovery community, you could see that it's probably a very salient, if not preferred, methodology. Because I want to get some purchase, I want to get some Velcro to have a harmonic of the appreciation of the nature of suffering so that we could take this journey together, you know? I get that. But, I just rather go for, fuck you, fuck me, fuck this, I don't give a shit, you know? Take that on. Peer into the nature of dreaming itself. Why bother to, take a shortcut or a long cut to something called selfing and suffering and my money and my life and my sex and my this, and then splay it out on a canvas, and paint it up?
Why not?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Why not? So it's kind of like, what do you feel like doing? What are you attracted to? Where does your natural, your natural hysteria light up? So if your natural hysteria lights up within the context of something called selfing and the release of selfing, then woo, you'll have something to believe in. That'll work for you. Rock on. And if your natural constitution is like, wait a second, I don't know what this means, then, you might hang out that way.
I felt like his was more, he was getting more that way this time. Something different about, like, where I could see, and this is totally my interpretation, I have no idea, but the one talk, I was like, he's bored with himself. He's totally bored with himself. He's trying to read a piece of paper that has nothing to do with anything, and he knows it, and he's flat, but all he's doing is looking for something juicy to talk about that has nothing to do with himself because he's tired of repeating the same fucking thing.
He spoke about that, too. Exactly that. While we were talking, he brought that up specifically, that he felt that if he waxed on for too long a time, he would lose attention.
It's already just wearing itself out, running its own course.
So he played around with reciting things that he thought, were interesting to rekindle attention or relevancy. Because going a little too far out wasn't holding the attention, the interest of the group, of the audience. So, he talked about it.
Oh, what, he felt like it wasn't holding the attention of people to go that far out?
I think that's
but
what he was pointing to.
But how would you know? I mean, it depends if you're eliciting a response or not. Because if you look at, Peter's talks, he'll be laughing at himself in the front of the room and everyone's fucking blank-faced,
Well, usually it's Peter that's blank-faced.
But it could be the other way around. Yeah. So it's not like if he was going on based on eliciting a response, he'd be fucked.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes he gets no response. He makes jokes and absolutely nothing. And people will still say, oh, that was a good Peter talk. I don't know.
Yes.
But nobody...
I know.
Nobody's like, it's not like a comedy show where he makes a joke and everyone's laughing. It's not, it doesn't always work that way.
We or any group is kind of a unique configuration, if not conflagration. And so... How we end up dreaming or articulating can be as buoyant as we, care to make it. Someone else who has a lot of experience with yoga and philosophy and non-duality and shit like that might show up at this little, table and go, you're an idiot, you're an asshole, both true. You don't know what you're talking about. Again, true. And there's no purchase here. Right? You put them in front of Ventino Massaro or, one of these other characters, and they're like, oh, I have purchase. I have Velcro. I have relevancy. I can relate somehow as a person, as an entity, as an emotional field to what that person is putting out. When non-specificity, which could be friendly to disorientation, is what we really have. So we're playing around with, let's say, a quality of lucidity, nausea-free lucidity in the face of chaotic non-specificity, of a non-stop field of absolute disorientation. And being able to relax from having to assert meaning or defend ourselves from it. We become friendly then, again, free from nausea, which can be one of the symptoms of, oh my God, this is truly disembodied and truly euphoric and has nothing to do with me, but I can't find anything other than me, and I don't think I should write about this to anybody. You know, mum's the word.
You can just babble. Babble.
Jesus, keep it down.
Nobody needs to know what you really think.
Yeah, keep it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think as we free ourselves up from what we insist is true, we can speak more easily and confidently because we know that we're just free associating in a dream field. So I'm not at risk of playing internally or with whoever shows up to, you know, just to improvise. Because it's not like anything's true. There's no quarrel then if nothing's true. If someone insists there's something true, that's fine, but, you know, that could turn out to be a kind of an impediment.
Yeah, like even you're saying that you don't think your whole youthful potential is total based on what, you know?
Yes.
Based on what you're expecting attention to look like, which is...
Well, you know, Paul being a public speaker for a long time, you're absolutely right, and I...
But I, you know, like,
yeah,
part of the...
Give him the benefit of the doubt, like he's feeling this somehow.
Yeah, but, I don't know.
I don't know.
This kind of feels some kind of resonance. I would imagine when you're chatting with us, you would feel some kind of resonance. If we're all just, like, sitting here twiddling our thumbs, looking away, like, not going to have as much juice as if we're sort of pulling it out from there and, like, into it.
You can feel it all.
Yeah.
That's what you are. You can feel it all. That's your nature, right? With no effort. You can feel it all. You do feel it all. You are all that feels it all.
That reminds me of a thing when I was younger. Pouring the funk out.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Sure. FTFO. No, but they don't hurt. Didn't we just get here 15 minutes ago?
Yeah.
I don't know. Hey, thanks for making the trip.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a gift.
Hi, everybody. Your shawl. It's very nice. And I want your shawl.
Sure. I got it in, it's like real sheer. I got it in a few different colors.
Nice.
I have a yellow one too.
Thank you.
Emily Ann.
She wears it as her only wrap when she's drumming.
That new drumming. It's good.
Yeah, I know.
Get your private parts in on the rhythm.
I'm a figure eight. I'm a figure eight.
You have two extra hands playing.
Mm-hmm. When you engage in certain activities, when I engage in certain activities that require the mind to be engaged and calculating and this and that, and it feels like an imposition.
Sure. Yes.
You know?
Yep.
It's like, I don't want to have to, like, perform some kind of thing that I have to think about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Like work.
All right.
What else?
Everything is, everything, were there anything, is, you know, absolutely functioning on a miraculous autopilot.
And sometimes.
And thinking comes in and says, I'm doing this.
Right.
I chose.
Right.
I picked. I'd better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. And
because, in fact, it doesn't have to be that way. But
it's, well, it, yeah.
But certain things repetitively feel narrow.
Sure. Yes, this can feel narrow. It can feel not narrow. It can feel. It cannot feel.
Yeah.
That's why when you remark on subtlety, what we're looking at is the subtlety of the genesis of identification. And so in a practice or a journey into clinging and not clinging sensitizes us to whatever this is, without clinging, even if just for a second or two, not that there's time, but even for a second or two to catch the aroma, the scent, the oxygenation, the psychic oxygenation of not clinging, you're toast, man, because you're going to want to go back there each and every time. You could say that is the, the bead or the seed of awakening is the recognition. The conscious recognition, right? The conscious recognition, whatever that implies, of not clinging, of absolute freedom from any form of clinging in your life. Don't tell me that's possible, right? You don't mean to say that's possible. I just thought I had a momentary epiphany. I may never have it again in my life, but it all comes back at you and says, no, dude, this is possible. And you're like, blah, 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 I don't want to hear it. Blah, 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 you know, but it is. It turns out to be.
And but at the same time, I have concluded, rightly or wrongly, and I'm hoping you'll help me out with this, that if you pursue it, forget it. Just forget it. Like, you can't be having had a certain experience and then hoping to repeat that. Like,
it doesn't work too well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not that reliable.
No, it's like,
yeah, and it may, is perfect. Is, you know, the sacred mantra. You know, someone might say the sacred mantra is fuck it. And that works, and works too. And it might be instantaneous that comes to roost, or it may look like a couple of years, a couple of decades, a couple of lifetimes, a couple of eons, a couple of yugas. Who knows? Yeah.
See, but again, that's helpful because I wasn't even aware,
right,
that I was pursuing a repeat,
yeah,
of a certain experience.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
which
it's
goes
easy
right
to slip
back to the homeless thing. It's all got, it goes right,
sure,
back to that.
Yeah,
because I was thinking, okay, I had an attachment, and I have to, and this is,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, for fun, which is referred to as Leela. The Divine Mother makes it appear as if there's an obstacle, that you'd better do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or you'd better supplicate forces higher than yourself, like any of the, you know, gods and goddesses of the Hindu pantheon, to assist you with your, you know, mission from God.
Right.
Yeah. And that occurs absolutely spontaneously, in full pixelation, full believability. It does. No condition actually endures. That this is felt, whatever that implies, we could suggest, endures. But now even endures has no relevance, because you're not parsing presence, disembodied euphoria, through demarcations of time. So endures is kind of curious.
There is a quality, though, the disembodied euphoria.
Yes.
That, you know,
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. This is felt.
Yeah, that's it.
Isn't it? Isn't it the bottom line?
Yeah, yeah.
This is felt. Now, maybe, you know, yogis or Buddhists or persons way more accomplished than we'll ever be can tell you something about the void.
We're going to see.
Right? Yeah, we're going to find out.
Ghost Indian sits in a cave for a fucking week.
Yeah, so maybe someone has the confidence to tell us about the void. But how relevant could that be? It really, I mean, all we can say is this is felt. If someone has a better notion of the void, okay, how relevant can it be? It doesn't amount to much. The void, turns out, doesn't amount to much.
Oh, wow.
Yowza.
If you travel to India, like-minded voiders.
Right. Yeah, they can all agree. Yeah. Hey, Bobby, was the void good for you? Yeah, it sure was good for me. How was it for you, Ralphie? Yeah, the void sure was good for me.